This podcast is brought to you by AJ Products, made in Sweden for the rest of the world. Visit ajproducts.ie to see how we can make your workplace work for you.
Grafton Street has always been a wonderful shopping street. It's just the right size, not too long and not too wide.
The city traders will illuminate their front windows from normal closing time until 2 o'clock in the morning to attract window shoppers and to give the city centre an air of gaiety.
And indeed there is an element of magic about Grafton Street these days. It has now been pedestrianised, of course, and young people are coming into...
If you stroll down Grafton Street past its glossy shopfronts, the odds are that your gaze won't wander any higher than the windows on the ground floor. But look up, and the history of Dublin is right there.
So there were the big grand houses of the newly moneyed elite in the 1600s. And then it started to change.
From farmland to high-end retail, Grafton Street has evolved through the centuries.
There were hotels, there was a cinema, there were Turkish baths, there were just all sorts of things. There were schools. Duke Wellington, of course, famously went to White School, which is now Bewley's.
But while you might think the street is owned by faceless global investment funds, that's not entirely the case. In fact, there are some very familiar Irish names in the mix.
The family behind Brennan's Bread owned a number of the buildings. Eamon Waters, the man who set up the Panda Waste Disposal Group, he owns Victoria's Secret. J.P. McManus, the well-known Limerick billionaire.
This is in the news from the Irish Times. I'm Bernice Harrison. Today, who owns Grafton Street? And how did it become Dublin's premier shopping street? I speak to our Dublin editor, Olivia Kelly, and reporter, Colm Keena. Grafton Street's location is lovely. At the top is St. Stephen's Green, at the bottom, Trinity College and College Green. Olivia, you wrote in the Irish Times on Monday about its former grand houses, hotels, Turkish baths, a cinema, schools, undertakers, restaurants and cafes and, of course, shops. When was that? And when did Grafton Street become the posh retail street with the big international brands that we have today?
Well, it's interesting that you mention straight away those two features of St. Stephen's Green and College Green, because essentially that's why Grafton Street exists. It was a laneway linking those two very important in medieval Dublin areas. So what you had was pasture land up at St. Stephen's Green, and then at the other end, you had College Green that was called Hoggan Green at the time. It was a sort of a ceremonial gathering type of area. So people were essentially making a desire line to get from one to the other. And there was also, very interestingly, a river. Now, it's still there, but you can't see it anymore. It's the River Stein, and it's a culverted river. So what that means is deliberately covered over, deliberately built over a river. But if you think about Grafton Street and you think about how it has a bit of a curve to it, it's not sort of a straight line like many of our other streets in this part of the city. And that's because the country lane that would have linked those two places sort of was on the banks of the river, took that sort of line of the river and linked one to the other. And then eventually, as Grafton Street developed, now when I mean an awfully long time ago, I'm talking sort of in the 1600s, maybe even slightly before, that was covered over, and then the street became a more formal street. And then initially, as you say, it was a residential street. So there were the big grand houses of the sort of newly moneyed elite. They were there in the 1600s and right into the 1700s. And then it started to change, and it started to have more of the kind of living over the shop, let's say. So the ground floor buildings all started to turn into shops, and then you would have had apartments above. And largely it appears that they were used by, say, the sort of the second sons, the spares to the heir, really, or maybe more genteel ladies. They would live there above those shops. And it developed like that. And then it became even more commercial when we had the opening towards the end of the 1700s. We had Carlisle Bridge, That's now O'Connell Bridge. So then you had this thoroughfare that went right from St. Stephen's Green through past Trinity, which was there, of course, at that time, through College Green and over to O'Connell Street. So that built a more commercial impetus to it. And that's when it started getting really shop heavy. But when I say shop heavy, we're not talking about now just fashion retail. There was everything there. There were, you know, all the sort of shops that you could think of, still, like there would have been clothing shops and drapers, but there was all sorts of eclectic stuff. There were, you know, clockmakers, chandlers, candle makers. And then, but there was variety of uses as well. It wasn't just all shops. There were hotels. There were eventually, now we're talking into the 20th century, there was a cinema. There were Turkish baths. There were just all sorts of things. There were schools. Duke of Wellington, of course, famously went to White School, which is now Bewley's. You know, there were far more cafes and restaurants right up until the middle of the 20th century than there are now. You know, it has become a bit homogenised, a bit sort of English high streety. But, you know, up until the mid 20th century, it really had a wonderful variety of both wonderful variety of shops and wonderful variety of different uses on the street.
Are there names that would have been on Grafton Street, I don't know, 100 years ago, that are still there now?
Yes, there are, definitely from 100 years ago and maybe even 150 years ago. So you'll be familiar with Brown Thomas, which used to be on the other side of the road to where it is now. It used to be in what is the Marks and Spencer's building, and it moved over there in the early 90s. Weir's Jewellers is there from a long time. Gone now, but a lot of people will remember Switzer's. And they would have been there, yes, 100 years ago. And then they were replaced by Brown Thomas there. They left in 1991.
Switzer's owners, the controversial Al Fayed brothers, who also own Harrods of London, have wanted to get rid of their loss-making Irish division for some time. It continued to talk to prospective buyers. One of those was Switzer's neighbours in Dublin's fashionable Grafton Street, Brown Thomas, which also operates the fashion chain Awear.
Today, there are those sort of long stairs on the street, and Bewley's since 1926, I think, was when Bewley started. So we're edging towards 100 years ago now there, aren't we?
Well, now I'm not going to go, you know, building by building up Grafton Street, but reading your piece, several really stood out to me for their history. The McDonald's building on Grafton Street. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it was a wonderfully posh hotel, the sort of the Shelburne or the Westbury of its day. You know, it was called Mitchell's Hotel. Now, prior to that, Mitchell's were there already, and they had a tea rooms and a chocolatier there, you know, so it was already sort of a nice posh edifice. But they got a bit of money together, and in the 20s they decided we're going to build something big and impressive. And that, I think, a lot of people would consider that the last big impressive building built on Grafton Street. And Mitchell's lasted from the as a hotel from the 20s right up until 1977, and now it's McDonald's.
The building itself, I'm very glad to say, is still intact on its upper levels, its windows still as originally designed.
But reading about that, it was a real sort of example of how, when you're walking up and down Grafton Street, look up.
Yeah,
because when you look up at McDonald's looks like McDonald's, but look up, it's an extraordinary building.
Mm, yeah, and quite different to everything else on the street. Like on the street as well, there are mostly small plots, and that dates from the Georgian and pre-Georgian era, even of those sort of small shops. They've mostly stayed in that sort of shape. But yeah, that's a big, very singular building there. You'll know it if you're walking down Wicklow Street, because it's bang ahead of you. And that's a great way to look at it, actually, to walk down Wicklow Street towards it. And you can really appreciate its grandeur.
Bewley's. Can't talk about Grafton Street without talking about Bewley's.
I mean, if you had a boyfriend and he brought you into Bewley's, you were doing well. he didn't go to the pub.
I used to love coming in with the children and having a cup of coffee and a few cakes.
You say that it was inspired by the discovery of Tutankhamun's tomb?
Yes, yeah. The historian Aaron Henderson told me about this, and this was just fascinating. It was just that the world was agog at the time when that was discovered in the 20s, and it influenced so much from clothing to jewellery to buildings. And yes, it has all these flourishes, you know, Egyptian motifs and that sort of thing.
So again, look
up. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you see that again on the upper floors. But Bewley's is as well one of the few shops that's really retained its shopfront, retained its character. So it's lovely to look at in its entirety.
And of course, it still has its windows. It's Harry Clark windows.
It does, yeah, down the back. They managed to retain them.
So there was a cinema on Grafton Street. I can't even picture where a cinema might have been. Where was it?
Well, it was on the western side of the street. So again, if you're going up Grafton Street, that's the right-hand side, the same side as things like Bewley's, and not far away from Bewley's. It's now a sort of late Edwardian building. It was built for the cinema. It was built by a brother, actually, of the painter William Orpen, Richard Orpen, I think.
Yes,
was his
Richard.
Name.
Yeah.
And it was one of the earliest cinemas in the country. It was built in 1911 and lasted right the way up to 1973. Oh. And it would have been a lovely thing to still have on the street. But
so was it open in 1973? You could still go to the pictures there?
Yeah, yeah. They wouldn't have shown, I don't think, sort of the big Hollywood releases of that.
Because it must have been quite small.
Yeah, because it's little.
Because
yeah.
The White Company's there now. So it's very beautiful building.
It is, yeah. It's been preserved and I think the council are quite happy with what the White Company have done on the ground floor. The building is still as it was, mostly as it was in 1911, sadly without the cinema in it.
Another thing I can't actually imagine being on Grafton Street, the Turkish baths.
Yes, yes. So Weir's. If you know the Weir's building, and again, it's another, you know, look up type of place because it all looks very uniform on the ground floor. But if you look up, you can see that there's an older bit, a sort of a Victorian, Edwardian looking bit. And then there's a bit slightly more modern 1930s. And it's that 1930s bit on the upper floors had been built for a Turkish bath, for a hammam. And there were loads of them around the city, right from the Victorian time right the way through to that sort of era. It only lasted a few years, I think, there. Maybe only 3 years, 3 to 4 years.
So it was a bit ahead of its time, was it maybe? I mean,
no, because it was there in the 30s.
Ah.
So it had been an earlier era of popularity of the Turkish baths. But I suppose, yeah, they're the precursor of our sort of spas of today, really, in that sense.
Grafton Street on a busy day can be a nightmare for pedestrian and driver alike. It's a narrow street and congestion is common.
Now, Grafton Street's pedestrianised. Pedestrianisation of streets in Dublin, it's a fraught topic, as you'll know very well, Olivia, from attending all those council meetings that you attend. But Grafton Street was only relatively recently pedestrianised. I mean, I remember when there was a bus stop, I think was it the number 10 bus outside Woolworths on Grafton Street, which I think is the Massimo. No, it's the one of the.
It is Massimo Dutti okay. Now, yeah.
So when was Grafton Street pedestrianised and was there controversy about it at the time? Because it's a raging success, so.
Yes. And there always is when it comes to these sort of interventions in the city. Anything people, since cars were invented, you know, people have been very wedded to them and don't like anything that might restrict their travel. They had a go in 1971. They had a go at doing it. They did pedestrianised it for 4 weeks. And then they de-pedestrianised it. They allowed the cars back in. There were various excuses at the time. I think there was a construction on streets nearby, which they said, you know, would make it unfeasible to not have a traffic route through. They went harder at it again and it stuck in the early 1980s in 1982. But even then, initially, it wasn't a 24-hour pedestrianisation. It was a sort of daytime, Monday to Saturday pedestrianisation. You could still, I don't know why they thought this was important, but you could still drive your car down Grafton Street on a Sunday for a few years after that. Right. And eventually it just became bedded in and people initially gave out yards about it. and then just stopped. It just went, you know, that went away. The businesses, you know, some of them were given out. Now, some of the businesses were straight into it straight away, but others weren't. But eventually everyone just accepted, yeah, this is the way we have to go. It's the better system. And you can't imagine cars going up.
Parking on Grafton. It's just impossible to imagine. But I'm assuming that Dublin City Council is the guiding hand on Grafton Street, or the enforcer, or whatever you
definitely both those things.
Okay,
yeah.
So how much control does it have, and have you seen it flex its muscles? Like, for example, Abracababra opened on Grafton Street. People threw their hands up in the air.
Yeah.
So why isn't the council doing something like that?
That is very interesting. So Abracababra opened where it is on, if people are travelling up Grafton Street towards Stephen's Green, it's on the left-hand side and only a couple of shops in from the start of the pedestrianised area. Now, if it had tried to open on the opposite side of the street, if say Brown Thomas or Weir's had decided, you know, we'd like an Abracababra in our shop, that couldn't happen.
Why?
The reason it can happen where it did was because there was an established use. So what is Abracababra had been Burger King. And the council finds it very hard to do anything about that. It has policies in place to stop a new uses happening somewhere, but where there's an established use, there's very little they can do. Now, they can try and control the look of the place, the signage, try and keep gaudy signage to a minimum. But because there's that established use there of a fast food joint. Now, a new fast food joint cannot open anywhere on Grafton Street unless the building is already used for a fast food outlet. Now, that's the same with anything like a phone shop, Or anything. There's a list of, you can't have a new Bookies on Grafton Street, but of course we already do have a Boyle Sport on the corner just before you get to the pedestrianised area. On the other side of the road, the Suffolk Street side, you couldn't do that now anywhere else on Grafton Street unless the premises is already used for that.
Coming up, Olivia Kelly outlines the City Council's master plan for Grafton Street, and Colm Keane lifts the lid on who owns the buildings that line the street.
This podcast is brought to you by AJ Products, creating a more friction-free office. Made in Sweden for the rest of the world. Visit ajproducts.ie to see how we can make your workplace work for you.
Is there a master plan for Grafton Street?
The council has various policies for Grafton Street, and you know it's a big feature in the development plan. It will stay as a premier shopping street, whereas they're sort of changing their thinking on the streets around Grafton Street that they could have. We must keep this as retail, and now it's very much no, a mix is better. But on Grafton Street itself, no, they want to keep that as sort of, they call it tier one retail, which is sort of what they're hoping for there is high-end retail, and they would try and keep out sort of what they might call lower order uses and keep it to that sort of standard. That's what they're hoping for there. So that would be their plan, yeah, for Grafton Street. And again, to keep the shop fronts in decent order, you know, and that'll be, you know, when people, again, it's the thing, people, when they're going in for planning permission, that's when the council becomes proactive, you know, or I suppose reactive then, because they're reacting to a planning permission, rather than the council marching up and down the street trying to put order on it.
Colm, you decided to go up and down Grafton Street, look at each individual building and find out who owns them. Who owns Grafton Street? When you started the project, did you have any view on who might own Grafton Street? And then were you surprised at who actually did?
Well, I didn't have a view, but early on I was told that funds, mostly, you know, investment funds, pension funds, life insurance funds own most of these buildings. But as I was going through it, first of all, people were telling me that the funds are getting out of this business a bit. And then secondly, I found that there had been a lot more off-market and quiet sales without people knowing, so that the the funds are being replaced by private investors.
And people, they're kind of familiar names, aren't there, Colin, popping up in familiar Irish names?
Yeah. There was kind of a presumption out there that private investors might be Chinese people or
Hong Kong people, or whatever. Yes, yeah. Money moving around the world.
Yeah, but in fact, it turns out to be mostly Irish families.
And who are they?
The family behind Brennan's Bread owned a number of the buildings. Eamon Waters, the man who set up the Panda Waste Disposal Group, he owns Victoria's Secret, that shop there. There's a family called the O'Leary's who own the Burger King franchise in Ireland.
And they also own that building, do they?
They own number 39, which is the Burger King. There's a family, I think they're from Roscommon, called the McConns, C-O-N-N, the McConns. And they have the Budget and Avis franchise in Ireland. And they have buildings on the street. J.P. McManus, the well-known Limerick billionaire, he has two buildings on the street.
What are they?
48 and 107. One of them is the Boyle Sports, and the other is the mobile phone shop 3 and the cigar emporium.
Mm.
Peter and Mark Keaveney, the Peter Mark's hair salon, they own three buildings on the street. And the Odlam family, they were one of my favourite. They own two buildings on the street.
The Flower family, Milling family.
Yeah, and they obviously own these buildings from way back. So the descendants of the original owners, they're scattered around the world.
And what building does the Odlam family own?
They own numbers 81 and 37. 37 is Carl's Irish Gifts at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And 81 is Rituals Cosmetics.
Ah.
The family behind the Jemison brand, mm-hmm. they own two buildings on the street.
I love when you're talking about the numbers of Grafton Street, because I'd say nobody knows what the numbers are. You know, we know Grafton Street, don't we, by the shops?
Yeah.
You know, isn't it funny? Like you said, where's 4? Where's 5? You know.
Just in case people don't know, number 1 is the Provost's House.
Trinity College Provost,
yes. And it goes up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 on one side of the street, all the way up to the green. And then it comes down the other side and ends up the corner building there, which I think is a lovely building. The J.J. Fox Cigars building. It's got a bit of a turret over it.
Yes.
That's 119.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know for a long time that little stretch that goes from College Green up to the start of the pedestrianisation, that is still Grafton Street.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah,
because
it
seems quite separate, doesn't it?
Well, I think,
and it's also, actually, there's vacant premises on it. It doesn't look great right now.
Yeah, it's a bit up and down. There's one or two empty premises.
You had some interesting bits of info about people on the upper floors of those buildings, didn't you?
Well, there's one building there where there's a family-run beauty college that's been there for a number of decades. But they've been bought by investors who seem to be based in Hong Kong, that building. And the new owner wants to put in 4 or 5, an apartment on each floor.
Ooh.
But they'd be very small. They'd be 45 square metres.
Right.
Because like Olivia was saying, a lot of these were built on a small footprint. And so there's nothing you can do about that now, mostly. And there's very few apartments on the whole street. There's a building that was owned by Johnny Ronan's group, and that's over the PTSB building. And opposite the entrance to Bruxelles, you'll see about 4 or 5 of those Airbnb types.
So they're Airbnb. They're people aren't living there.
Yeah, and they're very expensive.
Okay.
So during the summer, you might be spending 800 or 900 euros for a double room for the night.
Whew.
And they look out over Grafton Street.
What does property go for on Grafton Street? I mean, how much would it cost me to get into the street?
Yeah, I mean, I think this building's going for 3 or 4 million, you know, that would be smallish enough.
Now, you say that there are Irish families who own buildings, but also, obviously, there are institutional investors. So what buildings do they own?
Well, Irish Life are far and away the biggest one. And they own 21 buildings. There's a German pension fund. There's a British Virgin Islands company that's operating for some investor. There's Aviva own a few, but they're reducing their presence on the street.
Why?
I was talking to this fellow called Owen Feeney from Colliers. He specializes in retail and he just seems to know everything about the street and probably about other streets in Dublin as well. And as far as I know, what they do is if a global brand wants to set up in Ireland, they might want to start out in Grafton Street or somewhere close to Grafton Street, test the water and then move out from there. He was telling me that COVID gave them a fright, the pandemic, the development of online shopping gave them a fright. And there's also things to do with green energy. A lot of the investors in these funds, they want their investments to be in green businesses. And then the funds want to invest in property that's green. And a lot of the buildings on Grafton Street are difficult to make green because of their old townhouses and so on. So there's these various reasons why the funds are rebalancing their portfolios. And it seems rich Irish families are buying them because despite the worries about COVID and online sales and so on, things are going quite well. And Owen Feeney was saying to me that there's a lot of international high-end retail outfits that would like to get a foothold in Dublin and like to start off in Grafton Street, but there's not enough property that's of the right sufficient floor space. So that's one of the reasons why the streets off Grafton Street, there's a lot of development going along there.
Because you can have bigger shops. If you build new, you can have bigger shops.
And it suits their model. Mm. And one of the things I found really fascinating about it was when you think of all these small buildings, like, you know, the old townhouses, ones that are shoe shops now and so on. So the ground floor space is worth a load of money. If you wanted to get access to the upper floors, you'd have to sacrifice ground floor space to get the stairs in and maybe to satisfy the fire safety people and so on. And you wouldn't get the return from renting out the upper floors.
So, Colm, do we have any idea of what rents these businesses are paying to these landlords?
They have some details for some of them in the this thing called the Commercial Leases Registry. So if you look at numbers 26 to 27, they're occupied by a clothing thing called And Other Stories, and it's owned by a German property fund. They pay a rent of just under $1 million per year.
Whew. That's a lot of clothes to shift.
Yeah. Here's Hickey's Pharmacy and the Jewelers Fields and Claire's Accessories. They're on numbers 21 to 23. Well, you can see in the registry, there's a 15-year lease dated 2021 for the ground floor and basement that has an average annual rent for the period of €395,000.
Wow. Big money, isn't it?
Yeah. The shoe shop Skechers, that's one of the buildings owned by Brennan's Bread. But it's a 10-year lease dated June 2022 with an average annual rent of €850,000.
People might know that one. It's on the Marks and Spencer's side of the road, the east side of the road. So it's just before you hit Marks and Spencer's. And may have been just an extra nugget, may have been one of the oldest buildings on the street, with at least half of it. And number 14 is a particularly old house, we think. I don't know if people are familiar with the Dutch Billy style of house in Dublin. Few of them still around, and that would have been before the Georgian house, and it had a kind of a triangular gable front. And if you look up at that one, you can see it has a single window in what looks like a Georgian facade at the top. It's two windows going up and then a single window at the top. And that's probably because they put a flat front to try and hide it and not make it look like a Dutch Billy anymore, because they were gone out of fashion. You wanted your house to look Georgian, but you didn't necessarily have the money to demolish the whole thing and rebuild it.
Okay, well, you know what? I'm going to be looking up when I'm walking up and down Grafton Street in future. Look, thank you very much, Olivia Kelly and Colm Keane. Thanks very much. That's it for today. For the first time, you can find out who owns every building on Grafton Street in one article on irishtimes.com. And for full access to all of Olivia Kelly and Colm Keane's reporting, go to irishtimes.com/subscribe. I'm Bernice Harrison. This episode was produced by Aideen Finnegan. In the news, we'll be back on Monday.